المركز في التاريخ.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will. Let us, standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views. The pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born into this world.
Welcome. So one of the words that I've really come to like in my practice over the years is the word quietness, because quietness has a lot in it, and I think it shows the kind of attitude of silence, because sometimes silence can be hard to approach, but when it's quietness, like you can even read a book quietly, you can walk quietly, and meditate quietly, and so it's a way of kind of quelling the senses, being in the present, having a good attitude, is quietness. So as I've said in previous weeks, with the gentleness and patience, quietness has gentleness and patience in it. So it's a very easy way to tune in to what peace actually is. When we come to meditate, we don't have to be monks and nuns or go off to a desert, but it's about renouncing our usual desires. So we're not just going to go and watch TV or think restless thoughts the whole afternoon, but we put a task in front of us to try and be quiet, to try and meditate, to try and contemplate some wholesome truth. And by using our time in wise ways, then those drips of quietness become more noticeable. So then the noise that usually accumulates in a uncontrolled life is so noisy that there is never any quiet. And particularly, I'm sure people who've had families and been parents, before you're a parent, you think, you know, you get stressed sometimes, and then become a parent and it's a whole new level. As my friend told me, it's like he never had any reason to be stressed before he became a parent. But that friend of mine, when I was first teaching him meditation, I liked the idea of having like short meditations through the day. You know, you can be at work, you could be teaching, you could be sweeping or whatever, and you just become aware of what you're doing and bring some quietness into your activity. So if you like the breath, if you like being aware of body posture, whatever the particular mindfulness technique that brings quietness into your life, you then have these drips. And when I was a layperson, I was sometimes working 10-hour days, and then so I had this goal where every hour I would try and say my mantra for a little bit, you know, even just for 1 minute every hour. But then what that meant is then I had to be mindful. I had to be non-mindful enough to come back after an hour to say my mantra. And then that meant that through the day, then after a period of time, I started, in my breaks, having like 5-minute meditations. And then in my own time, even though I would then go home and work on my business, sometimes I would just sit and meditate 11 o'clock at night, even though I was totally exhausted. But you start to be able to tune into this quietness. And then the more you tune into it, it becomes like a close friend, something you're familiar with, something you know. And the more we tune into that, then that affects the rest of our lives. So then what seemed like a difficult task of quietening the senses, the calming of the mind, actually starts to be something that is practical. So rather than just saying, you know, have an hour of meditation or 20-minute meditation a day, I think a better approach is to have that with this awareness of developing quietness, coming back to your meditation, your mindfulness object through the day. Because then, as my teacher, when I was talking to him once about this, because, you know, we have, as a monk, we have our normal days, and then every now and then at the main monastery I'm from, we have 4 2-week retreats a year that we can do. And so they're time where you have put down all your extra duties and you can just focus on your meditation. Even your lunch is brought to you. So literally, but if you then wait until that retreat starts to get into your meditation, then, it's not going to work the same. But if you have this approach where every day you're just doing your best to look at what difficulties are coming up in the mind, how to overcome them, and then have these drips of quietness, it's like the kettle is ready to boil. And then so when you have your retreat or your personal time off, or even just one day a week where you focus on more spiritual things, then the practice can deepen. But if you just wait every time till you sit down or write in a spiritual journal or whatever your practice is, then it's just like you've just let the monkey out of the cage, and then you've tried to catch it again and tell it to sit down. You're not going to have wonderful results. It's going to be a very slow path. So and then when we do go the wrong way, just to be honest with ourselves about it and go, oh, you know, that last 3 months, that was actually really terrible, you know? I totally forgot about the foundations and, you know, I got lost in all these other things And sure, I was practicing a bit, but basically it was a big waste of time, you know. And so what was the causes for that? Oh, okay, I was getting involved with this, that, and the other, and it was because I was associating with these things. And okay, so if I just be a bit more mindful in this way, and I cut that out, then maybe I can avoid that in the future. So we actually learn from our experience. So we're not being judgmental and telling ourselves we're bad, but rather we see that the results were bad. And if the results are bad, what was the cause? So we're looking into cause and effect. And the other thing is we have this idea, this perception of who we are. And the perception of who we are can be very different to the reality of who we are. And so that's where we start to look at what's our true values in life, like actually investigate. If we can see what our values and intentions are, then we can start to use them as the jumping board for our actions. Like I'm a Buddhist monk, so we have renunciation and developing the divine emotions, learning to be quiet, learning to be honest. So I have a series of values. And then, so if my actions get out of a line, I can see clearly that I've just been acting in a way that isn't associating with my core values. You know, it's good to have goals, but also if we spend our whole time planning our lives and thinking, we're just going to get lost in this kind of perpetual thinking about the future and the past. So, and I learned a useful tool that if you do have something that you're thinking about a lot, you can just set a time. You can go, okay, Friday, 4 p.m., I'm going to sit down for an hour and I'm going to make a decision about this. And that's a useful tool because then the mind for the next 5 days is going to jump around like a monkey telling you you have to think about it. And you say, no, I said 4 o'clock on Friday, I'm going to sit down and think about it. But whatever you say now, I'm not listening to you. And it's just like a little five-year-old child at your feet, you know, asking for candy. If you give it candy, it's going to do it again the next day. But if you tell it, okay, once you've done your chores, you know, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you can have a candy. And if you stick to that, then the kid will learn the boundaries. And the same is with our minds. It's not much different to a five-year-old child. So it doesn't mean we're going to be harsh to it, but we just find ways to actually work with it. So we're not judging it, we're not telling it off, we're not being angry at it, but we're just being practical, that if we listen to our thoughts all day long, they're just going to drive us mad. We're just going to, by the time we go to bed at night, we're going to be totally exhausted. So I think that's why acting out of, you know, values and integrity and coming to understand the things that we stand for mean that we can investigate over time whether they're actually worthwhile pursuits or not. Because the only way we can truly know something is through our experience. So when I was learning to give up alcohol, I had quite an addictive personality. So it would just be one sip of alcohol and I would be back to 3 months of drinking. And then I would reflect in that time, it was very hard for me to meditate. And I would associate with other people who would drink more. And so my life would change in various ways. But my persistence just to keep investigating and looking at it, eventually I saw that clearly my life was much worse for me personally if I was drinking alcohol than if I was abstaining from it. Because if I was abstaining from it, I was much clearer minded. I could spend more time meditating. And I could focus. When I was a layperson, I was involved with various groups and things in my spare time. So I found more rewarding things to do with my time rather than drinking. I realized it was a form of escapism that I was using it to relax rather than actually seeing what potential I had and finding more rewarding ways of using my time. But it's not like we don't just tell this to another person. In Buddhism, it's more like, you know, learn from our own experience, see what's true for ourselves. Yes, there are these teachings, but we don't blindly believe Now, we can take them on board, have faith that they may be true, but it's when we see these things for ourselves, that's when we have gratitude to the person who has taught us them. And it may seem like we're in crazy times. These days we have all this media and we're bombarded with newspapers and television and opinions. But I'm sure, in any time in history, I'm sure, you know, with the Caesar in power or, you know, the great pharaohs in Egypt or whatever it was, there was always something, you know. So we always think that, you know, we have to get involved with everything that's going on in the world. I like the idea of like what Gandhi said, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. Because when we see what good we can do with our own lives, then we're actually, you know, making use of our potential. And then because we're making use of our potential, we're being kind, helpful people, we're tuning into quietness, and then that will affect the people we know. And then that'll affect the people that they know, and then it has a knock-on effect. So just by being a simple, quiet person who lives by integrity, we're actually, you know, changing the world around us. But if we just allow the monkey mind to tell us everything that's terrible with the world so we don't do anything good, and we're just disempowering ourselves. It's not that there isn't time to stand up for things and worthy causes to take hold, but if we're just talking and thinking, then that's just a waste of time. We have better things we can do with our time. And because in Buddhism there's the 8 worldly winds. And so we have like eightfold path, which is when we're learning to live by Dharma, which is just like a basic framework to live by for our actions and our mental states and how to avoid evil and develop meditation and mindfulness. And then the opposite of that is the worldly winds. And that's where we get consumed by praise and blame, consumed by success and failure, consumed by gain and loss, and consumed chasing after pleasure and avoiding pain. And when we are always pushing and pulling with these worldly things, and so think if we were, you know, the greatest athlete in the world, and then we broke our leg, because we were seeking that stuff, that great success, and we were doing so well, and then we just broke our leg in a way where we could never do that again, that may be completely terrible, and then because of the suffering of that attachment, could completely destroy a person's life. But also if they just saw, well, you know, it wasn't their leg to begin with. When they came into the world, it wasn't their leg. And every day we eat food and our muscles and things are changing. But, you know, that could transform them into helping other disabled people or transform them into doing something else wonderful with their life, or even just, you know, being a great parent or great person. So our attitude has a lot to do with it. And so the success and failure and all these things, it's not that we shouldn't learn to do well in life, you know. Being earning millions of dollars just means that you can give more, you know. So there's nothing wrong with earning millions of dollars. You can be even more generous. And being successful means you're going to learn high discipline. You're going to become profoundly disciplined. And so it's not that success and these things, there's anything wrong with them. It's when we attach to the results of it, that's when it's suffering. When we attach to our happiness, oh, may my body always be happy and I never have a single pain. Well, that's unrealistic. We're all going to die at one point. There's going to be a very difficult moment of detachment and there's going to be suffering. So everybody at some point will probably have some moment of suffering in their life. And it's just how we start to see, okay, these are just the worldly winds. So they're always going to want to blow me this way and that. So I'll just learn to be a good person. And when they come knocking on my door, you know, if somebody praises you, you just look, well, is there any praiseworthy qualities in me? If there is, you acknowledge it. And if they were mistaken, well, you just go, oh, okay, well, I don't know what they're looking at, but that's not there. So you just be honest about things without attaching to it. Or like Ajahn Chah, my teacher's teacher, he said, if somebody calls you a dog, look to see if you've got a tail. So rather than getting angry that they're calling you a dog, you know, or calling you a pig, you know, well, maybe I do have some pig-like tendencies. I just don't want to admit it. And so then we're turning it around, and somebody who may have even been trying to be nasty at us, then they can become our teacher. You know, so we can actually just sift out what is true and what is not true without getting angry at the person. And then when change comes knocking on our door, we know change. And when I was meditating this afternoon, looking at this big tree, a strong breeze came. And then because of the summer, the leaves are dry, so all the dead leaves are just being blown out of the tree. And that's like, you know, a tree didn't say, you know, may this leaf be born, may this leaf die. It's just, it's a natural process. And so when we attach to the lives and the things around us, inevitably it will change. And it's just like a leaf on a tree. You know, are we sad when the leaf blows off the tree? Or is it just a part of life? It's a process. And so then we can learn to, rather than fear the eight worldly winds, we can just, you know, try to be successful in our lives, try to be good people, try to help others, learn to be generous, learn to be kind. And then when the leaves blow off the tree, we just understand, well, that's nature. I expected that. And I didn't ask to be born, it just happened. And when I die, well, that'll be my time. But what the good reflection is that, you know, when we die, are we going to be able to practice then? Are we putting off our practice to somewhere in the future? And if that's the case, then, you know, it may be the last minute of our life where we actually regret it. I think the Buddha's last words were something like, you know, strive on with diligence, work out your own liberation, lest you regret it later. Meaning that, you know, if we waste our time in this life, then when we're about to die and we look back at all the time we wasted or indulged in useless endeavors, then that will be a cause for regret. And so just linking it back to the quietness, that's why it doesn't have to be a big thing. We can live our lives and sometimes even be busy, but within the activity there can be quietness. Within anything there can be quietness. It's just a matter of slowing down and choosing to be with the gentleness and the patience and not follow those restless, irritable moods. So I think we will do the meditation. That's a lot of information. Start by relaxing the whole body. You can take a few deep breaths. It's useful if you ever find yourself thinking a lot in the meditation. Just take a few deep breaths and restart the meditation, as if you're starting a whole new meditation. Sometimes, you know, we may get lost in thought for a few minutes. So just start by taking a few deep breaths. Letting go of all tension, anxiety, and thinking. put down the past, put down the future. See this tendency of liking and disliking, sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touch, thoughts, concepts, feelings. We're always liking and disliking things. There's also neutrality. During meditation, we learn to neither like or dislike. Just have this neutral, balance, equipoise. Relax the toes. Bringing peace and relaxation into the toes and the feet. Into the ankles. Peace and relaxation, spreading up the lower legs, the calves and the shins, all the way up to the knees. Allow the knees to completely relax. Kindness and peace at the knees. Relax the thighs, spreading up from the knees into the thighs, moving up towards the hips. Until the whole of the thighs are completely at peace, like soft clouds fading away. Relax the hips, the weight of the body onto the seat or the cushion or the floor. Relax the waist, everything in this region, all tension fading away. Relax the belly. Deeply, bringing peace and relaxation to the belly, becoming aware of the rise and fall. Rises with the in-breath, falls from the out-breath. Aware of the whole belly. Inside out, how much tension held in the belly, just allow everything in this region to relax. As we relax the body, we're relaxing the mind as well. As the belly rises and falls with the breath. The solar plexus and the diaphragm, everything in this mid region. Relax the lower back, like soft clouds, the middle back, like soft clouds, moving up the spine, relaxing the nervous system. Into the upper back and the shoulder blades, like soft clouds fading away. Just bringing kindness, kind awareness to the upper back, allowing any tension to unwind. As comfortable and at ease as it is. Okay, good enough. Sense of friendliness and peace through the upper back. The sides of the torso moving through to the upper chest. I'm aware of the whole upper chest. Just relax any tension. The lungs, the heart, the chest. And the chest is open and relaxed. The heart, maybe like a soft smile stretching through the sky. Just allow the heart to be at ease. The chest to be relaxed. The shoulders. Deeply relaxed. Any lingering tension in the shoulders. Just allow it to unwind. So much tension held in the shoulders. Just allowing the body become relaxed, comfortable, but also upright and alert. Relax the upper arms, elbows, the lower arms, the wrists, palms of the hands, the back of the hands, fingers, the fingertips. This is relaxation coursing and spreading through the arms. Allow the body to be in a comfortable posture. Relax the neck and throat, the chin, the lips, the tip of the tongue, teeth, the gums, all the muscles of the face, cheeks, the jaw, the nose, under the eyes, all tension under the eyes, the eyelids, and the eyes themselves, like soft clouds, fading away. And symbolically, also the eyes are a place of wisdom. Just allow the eyes to relax, be at peace. Any lingering tension, any lingering difficulties of body or mind, just give them up. Allow the eyes to be at peace. Eyes of wisdom, eyes of peace. Relax the eyebrows, the temples, the forehead, any lines on the forehead, allow them to vanish and relax. The scalp, the ears, the back of the head, the whole head, the whole body, alert, awake, relaxed and peaceful. Like soft clouds, sense of gentleness and peace, welcoming the present moment as it is. Settling into the present moment, like a bird snug in the nest, just being comfortable right here, right now. No need to fly here or fly there. Just content and relaxed. And just see how, firstly, if you have a favorite meditation object, just continue to meditate on your own. If you'd like some guidance, or just tune in this background noise. Just ask yourself, how can I watch the breath in a comfortable way? The feelings of the in-breath, the feelings of the out-breath. Some people watch at the nostrils, some at the lip, some at the heart or the belly. Just find what's comfortable for you. Some people watch their whole experience, or even the body itself. I myself usually watch at the lip. Just find what's comfortable. Aware of the in-breath, aware of the out-breath. That feeling of relaxation from the body, see if we can feel it now in the breath. Feeling the relaxed in-breath, feeling the relaxed out-breath. Being okay with whatever is. Sense of humility and kindness. Feeling the relaxed in-breath. Feeling the relaxed out-breath. Allowing all external perceptions to vanish, all thoughts to vanish. Content to be with one in-breath. Content to be with one out-breath. Not asking for anything. Welcoming whatever is. Breathe in peace, a peaceful smiling. Breathe out joy, joyfully letting go. Breathe in peace. Breathe out joy. Learning to have clarity of insight, one in breath and one out breath. Breathe in peace, a peaceful smiling. Breathe out joy, joyfully letting go of everything. And tune into the feeling of the breath. The feeling of peace, the feeling of joy. Breathe in peace, peaceful smiling. Breathe out joy, joyfully letting go, relinquishing, untying.
breathing, feeling the peace, peaceful smiling. Feel that joy, joyfully letting go. Like sensing the quietness of a forest, there's this peaceful, relaxed ease. Breathing out, experiencing the joy of relinquishment, relinquishing thoughts, moods, everything. Breathe in peace, breathe out, let go. Breathe in peace, breathe out, letting go. Sense of dignity and kindness. Breathe in peace. Peaceful smiling. Breathe out joy. Joyfully letting go. Welcoming, allowing, being friends with. Whatever's happening is good enough. Sensation, joyful relaxation. Breathe in peace. Breathe out joy. Like a hand opening, not holding on to anything. Attitude of gentleness and patience, acceptance and a willingness to be present. Breathe in peace, peaceful smiling. Breathe out joy, joyfully relinquishing. Dignified and awake in a posture. Breathe in peace. Breathe out joy. I'll be silent now for the next 7 or 8 minutes. Do your best to keep it to meditation and keep a good attitude. sense of welcoming and ease. Breathing in peace. Breathing out. Joyfully letting go. Dignified and awake in a posture. Carefully attending to one in breath. Carefully attending to one out breath. Using the peace and the joy of this meditation, however much we've developed, just to reflect back on ourselves. May I be joyful for the good actions that I have done. May I enjoy the results of those good actions. Joy to myself, joy to those I know, joy to all beings everywhere. May all beings enjoy the fruits of their good actions. May all beings reflect upon them. May it be a source of celebration and inner joy. Joy to all beings in the ambrosia, including myself. In all the directions, beings that are seen, beings that are unseen, whatever being there is, may we share this joy with them. Sadhu, sadhu, may all beings continue being joyful. You see what the results, how we feel after just over half an hour of meditation. What were the things that worked so that we can become skillful? Thank ourselves for the willingness to practice. And we may take this peace and joy into our lives with us in the present moment. Tuning into quietness. May we take this quietness with us. And when you're ready, you may open your eyes. The evening of quietness and joy. May you have a peaceful evening and week. We finish by doing a chant. If you're not Buddhist, then you can just translate the few non-Buddhist terms into something that's meaningful to you. In your own heart. How let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration. Through the goodness.
that arises from my practice. May my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtues, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of Death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my light. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless through the goodness that arises from my practice. And through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble Lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
And a little blessing.
Bhavatu sa mangalam rakkhantu sabba devata sa.